Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Culture Map presents What's Eric Eating? From the Gal Media Studios in Houston, Texas, here's Culture Map food editor Eric Sandler.
Welcome to What's Eric Eating, Culture Map's weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map food editor Eric Sandler. We are still recording this over Skype to promote social distancing. I have Sean Beck from H-Town Restaurant Group coming up in a little bit. But first, I'm joined by my co-host this week. She's a beverage consultant who has created cocktail programs at restaurants all over the city of Houston. Linda Salinas, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Oh, you know, just living my best life. Well, considering, right?
Considering the circumstances, yeah. How are you now is phrased in, like, it in the implied, how are you in light of the current circumstances?
I mean, honestly, I'm grateful. I'm grateful to see the city, like, take care of its own. I know that there's a lot of groups and so on and so forth. There's a lot of like outreach to my industry, which is hospitality. You know, like, I'm safe, all is well. So yeah.
Right. I mean, I feel like I'm healthy and I have a job and a place to live, and that puts me ahead of a whole lot of people who are really struggling right now. So yeah, I feel very fortunate, and I have just a ton of sympathy and, you know, my thoughts, and I know your thoughts are with all the people we know that are not working right now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I'm the Texas market manager for Liquid Alchemist, which is a syrups company based out of LA. And thankfully, I'm gainfully employed and I'm still doing my job, you know, and I'm obviously right now everything's on hold as far as like what we do on the back end of things. But I think that the best thing that we can do is if you do have a job, support, you know, and there's other things, and not just financially, there's other ways, you know. I think this is a really good time for all of us to kind of like reach out to who's close to us, you know, and for me, it's my hospitality friends, you know?
Well, yeah, let me dive into the news of the week, because that is topic number one, is kind of what are you seeing out there? You know, restaurants are serving meals to go, but bars are completely shut down. So what are some of the things you're seeing out there for bars and bartenders specifically that they're doing to kind of weather this crisis?
You know, it's interesting. There's a couple of different bartenders that are actually doing basically like, show me your bar and let me send you some recipes and you can tip me on that, you know? So if you're engaged to, you know, or if you're engaging on social media with some of your favorite bartenders, some people are doing that. Cottonmouth Club is a bar by Michael Neff and Mike Raymond. Mike Raymond was of Reserve 101, awesome whiskey bar. They opened up Cottonmouth, and Mike Neff has done a ton of incredible consulting all over the states. But they do this really cool show every night at 9 p.m. and they do a podcast. So they're engaging their clientele. There's different brands that are doing contests and paying out cash. There's a lot of like really cool stuff that's happening social media wise. I mean, we all have time. I'm sure everyone that has an iPhone has looked at their screen time you know, right now. But
no, you don't. No, you don't need that kind of shame in your life. This is not the time to be looking at the Screen Time app. You just put that away.
Yeah, but I mean, a lot of that, you know, there's cool stuff like that that I'm seeing, and I know that Butcher's Ball is doing cocktail kits, and bars are not open, and like for instance, Alba Huerta from Julep is doing the mixers for your cocktail needs. Pico's is doing little to-go's, really cool margarita kits.
Well, you're working with Rosewater, right? I mean, they're doing
yes,
juices and mixers to go.
Yes, actually, in Clear Lake, there's a really fantastic cocktail bar, Rosewater, and those guys are just doing their mixes. They're doing like these beautiful elixirs, and they're using some of our syrups. And it's really funny because, you know, they're used to having a little tiny bar, and because of that community out there, they literally, I think it's something close to like 1,000 cocktail kits or something, or 800 cocktail kits, like incredible. So definitely reach out to your neighborhood bar, your dive bar. Someone's, you know, cooking some things, you know?
All right. So you mentioned bartenders are doing, like, they'll evaluate your bar and suggest recipes and stuff for tips. You want to shout out like one or two people that are doing that?
You know, there's just too many. So I don't want to be too biased. There's too many people, but like, just look for your favorite bartender, you know?
They've got time. They will help.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. And then let's move on to topic number two. Another organization that you've been involved in, I'll Have What She's Having.
Yes.
Has been hosting a whole bunch of online classes with culinary professionals. I sat in on a Zoom cooking class with Don Burrell from Culture. June Rodill and Shannon McCracken from Goodnight Hospitality did like a little wine and cheese class. And then I saw coming up this weekend, Tiki Cocktails and Caribbean Bites with Sarah Troxel from Nobies and the Toasted Coconut and Keisha Griggs, who has 8 Kitchen in Palatine Row. So what do you think? Have you seen any of these? What do you think about them?
I think they're awesome. I think, you know, they're basically master classes, you know, and that started, I mean, I started seeing that just a couple of months ago, like social media wise, like really high up master classes. It's basically like, you know, these really good tutorial classes and by professionals. And I love the fact that they are doing local. I think that this is a great time to like really, really work your magic. I mean, I love Sarah Troxel. She's a great up and coming bartender, and to watch her, you know, on a couple of different mediums. Like she actually jumped on our live feed, which the company I work for is Liquid Alchemist, obviously, but she jumped on the live feed, and like we had people from San Francisco, Tiki cocktail makers, and, you know, a couple of other people from across the country that jump on our feed, and to watch like our Sarah Troxel do this awesome, you know, coconut cocktail is really fantastic. And so, you know, supporting local, and I mean, I'll Have What She's Having is a woman's organization. I think it's awesome, you know?
Yeah, no, I got to sit in on Dawn's cooking class. She's been on the show a couple of times, so listeners who've been with the show for a while know how engaging she is. Mm-hmm. And that it comes with a meal kit, right? You pay, you know, $75 or whatever it costs, and you get all the ingredients to cook along with the class. And she made this onion soubise, this sauce that people heated up, and then sort of as they were heating it up, they, you know, all of these comments about, oh my God, this smells incredible. You know, and she's showing them how to, you know, roast a chicken and sear it and make gnocchi and all this stuff. And it's, you know, it's a really, I mean, she's a really engaging person and obviously super talented, a James Beard semifinalist this year for her work at Culture. And so it is, I think it's just a phenomenal opportunity to get access to, you know, instruction from, share knowledge with people that, you know, usually are just too busy working to kind of share that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I mean, I think that we're seeing a shift. I think, you know, I was talking to someone the other day we're shifting the way that we do service, you know? And ultimately, like as a hospitality professional, as just a, you know, like what we do is to make you feel special, you know? And even though we can't pull a chair for you or give you a glass of water while you're looking at the menu, like, I think this is a time to like really engage, you know, because that's really what we're good at. We're good at making you feel comfortable. We're really good at knowing what you need, you know? And I think that these classes are an awesome way to still, you know, be safe at home, doing your thing, and like seeing how soothing cooking or making a cocktail or having these experiences at home right now. So I think it's rad.
Yeah. All right. And then topic number three, last week, Felice and I talked about how HEB is doing restaurant takeaway meals from Underbelly Hospitality, Cherry Block, and Brennan's. That program is expanding. They added Cultivare this week. They have plans to add, it's not been totally finalized yet, but they have plans to add both Kieran's and Hugo's to that. And then I guess Kroger saw it and got jealous because now Kroger has Kim San, Burns Original Barbecue, Peli Peli, and Frenchie's at some of their locations.
Yeah, they're doing like pop-ups in front of their grocery stores. Is that not correct?
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah. It's like limited days and limited hours, but they keep adding stores and locations.
Well, I think that those are two totally different two different experiences altogether. Sure. Obviously, because driving up and pulling up and, you know, and getting food, like basically like a drive-through is, I think that's what Kroger's doing. But I think it's great to support. I mean, obviously there's a part of me that thinks that you know, oh, this is great, but like, and it is, it's an incredible program, but like, I think it's scary to be out right now, you know? And I think that kind of soothing, hey, look, I can just take this home. You know, you can pick it up in a cold box. And this support for locals, I think, is great. I also have seen that an interesting article this week was, order from your restaurants, you know, order directly, don't order from these delivery apps. And so I think that this is a way to kind of, you know, still support your local restaurant and giving them a great platform right now. So.
Right. Yeah, no. I agree with you. And let me just ask you one thing though. Do you think this is a trend that will continue when people can sit in dining rooms again? Or do you think this is kind of like one and done in terms of only during this time when dining rooms are closed? Because I have to say, I kind of like how convenient this is. I kind of like the idea of being able to go into an HEB, get my, you know, Wagyu helper from Underbelly, heat that up at home. I kind of hope this continues.
I really do too. Houston Shift Meals has a bunch of takeout meals from Cherry Block. And I mean, they're incredible. Like being able to have that little bit of experience, you know, at the grocery store. Cause like, look, not everybody knows how to cook, you know?
And true story.
A lot of people don't know how to cook. That's why, you know, we're the greatest restaurant city in, I think, you know, in the South, you know, but like, I've seen a lot of really bad videos of people cooking. And if we can help these people with wonderful meals at a grocery store, why not? You know, why not? So yeah, I've seen some pretty bad videos out there, but you know, I'm not going to call anybody out today.
Not today. Maybe next time you're on the show.
Maybe next time, you know, maybe we'll have to do that when everything chills out.
That's right. The post-coronavirus call-out episode.
Yes.
All right. Linda, that does it for the news of the week. We will be right back with our restaurants of the week. Stick around.
You're listening to What's Eric Eating?
So, Linda, for the restaurants of the week segment, what I've been doing is just kind of asking people where they've been getting to-go meals from. So, where have you been getting to-go meals from?
I've been ordering from a bunch of different people, but Alfresco, fresh pasta. You know my beloved Polly's. My beloved Polly's, absolutely. I've ordered several things from them. I love the fact that they do specials still. And you know I'm about that Oso Buco life.
Thursday nights. Yeah, yep. I did that a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, praise emoji for that. Burger Chan. They're doing breakfast sandwiches. Hugo's. They're doing breakfast tacos. Brazil has got rad pizzas and frosé that I've ordered from them.
Wait, you're too modest. You created that frosé recipe for them.
I certainly did. I created the frosé at Brazil.
Shout out to Chef AJ.
Yeah, Chef AJ, of course. Let's see, who else? I've ordered from LaGrange. Ninfa's, for sure.
So basically everywhere that you've worked in the last 5 years, you've been.
Yes.
Plus Polly's and Burger Chain.
Well, I mean, I have to support fam, you know? Like, these are people that are near and dear to me. So if I can, like, order from them, you know. I did sneak in, don't tell anybody, but I did sneak in some Shake Shack a couple of weeks ago. So
I have been firmly committed to only locally owned restaurants. I have not gone to any fast food chains since this whole thing started. I think. So it's been what, like 5 or 6, 5 weeks already?
Yeah.
I think when I slip, as I inevitably will, it's either going to be at Whataburger or Shake Shack. But it's going to be like that. I'm just going to want that burger. And I know, like, I should go to the burger joint. I should go to Bernie's. There's a million places. I should go to Burger Chan, but it's going to be a fast food burger when I finally slip, or it's going to be a French dip sandwich from Houston. It's one or the other, I think.
Oh, you know what? Who else? Rudyard's.
Chef Anthony. What did you get from Rudyard's?
I ended up getting a Detroit style pizza, and I've not. You know me. I'm real finicky about stuff, and I'm all the way Neapolitana style. Like that's my jam. I like it skinny and crispy. But he made me this breakfast. Yeah, I'm a breakfast pizza fan, by the way. But he did this Detroit style pizza, and he put lardons, tons of cheese, blueberry compote, and so much cheese. I could drown in it. It was outstanding.
And a breakfast pizza, so eggs, I guess.
No eggs. It was just the bacon. The bacon and the
bread. Oh, right.
Yeah.
Bacon and cheese. Bacon and cheese and blueberries. So salty. Yes. So salty, smoky, sweet.
Yes, queen.
Pretty solid.
Yeah. So, but yeah, they're. I've ordered a couple of different things from them too. So yeah, man. There's people are cranking out some really, really good food.
Well, yeah. So I got lured in Saturday night by Squabble because Drew Gimma, the baker there, was doing chocolate babka, which is near and dear to my Jewish heart. So I had to go up to Squabble. I got some pasta. I got a kale salad. But really, it was just an excuse to buy babka. And then for Easter, Avondale Food and Wine was doing prime rib. And I've had Chef Olivier's prime rib before. This came. I got a pretty hearty portion of meat. And of course, you know, their owner, Mary Clarkson, is a regular guest on the show. So I think I don't know if everybody got the same portion that I did, but I got a ton of prime rib with these really nice roasted carrots and potatoes with it that were good. And then a fresh green salad and this incredible chocolate tart that was really first rate. It's like, oh yeah, Olivier is a French chef. He makes really good desserts.
Yeah.
Kevin Dedary at Roost was slinging some red beans and rice. So I had to get in on that last week too. So those were a couple of the places I ordered from.
Yeah, you know what I haven't tried yet, and I'd really love for someone to drop me a DM and tell me about how it was. I know it's good though. Justin Yu is doing Money Cat. Is that correct?
Yes. Every week I say I'm going to go to Money Cat. Every week on this show, I say I'm going to go to Money Cat, and every week I come up short. But I went to Squabble, which is another of Justin's restaurants, so I feel like I have somewhat fulfilled my – my obligation, but yes, I look at that money cap menu every week and it just looks so good. I really need to, this is the week. No more effing around. I'm going to make it happen.
Yeah. Come on now. Come on. I mean, I think that, there's just there's a lot of really great food coming out. You know what? Crawfish Phoenix.
Very nice.
Phoenix. I got crawfish from Phoenix on Saturday and they are delicious. I'm going to get some crawfish today from Crosby Crawfish Shack.
Look at you taking a road trip.
I mean, it's right now is the perfect time to do crawfish, like right now. And I'm so sad that I can't really eat crawfish with anyone. So I'm just going to go out there, pick up some crawfish, sit on my patio, crack one, and go to town. So,
yeah, I will tell you, when I was driving around Saturday night, from my house in Montrose up to Squabble, I kind of took the long way home, wound my way through the Heights a little bit. I drove past BB's Cafe, and their parking lot was full of people getting to-go orders, which I assume, I figure like 80-90% of that was all crawfish to-go. It must have been.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like, what else do I have to do tonight? Oh, wait, I'm going to go home and like develop more cocktails or, I don't know, organize my cookbooks. I'm like, I might as well just drive to Crosby and get the best dang crawfish in Texas.
All right, Linda, thank you very much for doing this.
All right. Thanks a lot, y'all.
All right. I will be right back with Sean Beck. Stick around.
You're listening to What's Eric Eating?
I am joined this week by Sean Beck. He is the beverage director for the H-Town Restaurant Group. That is Hugo's, Backstreet Cafe, Sochi, Caracol, and more. Sean, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm well, sir. Well as can be under the present circumstances, but thank you for having me on.
Thanks for joining me. I want to talk about the things that you're doing specifically in response to coronavirus, but I do always like to start these interviews at the beginning. So can you just tell me a little bit about how you developed an interest in wine and kind of how you came to work for Tracy Vaught and Hugo Ortega?
Sure. I'm pretty much a lifer. I've been with the restaurant for 20 years. So I started working with them when I was in college, and I'd was going to the Honors College at U of H, and I had a friend working over here, and he told me to kind of try it over here. And so I'd prior to that been working at like a microbrewery / restaurant and a brief sojourn for the Papa's Group. And I was like, oh, okay, well, that seems nice. It's a cool spot. And I think they had about a 40-50 bottle wine list when I started. In fact, the most expensive wine on the wine list was a 1994 Napa Valley Silver Oak Cab for like $55 a bottle. So, which you won't see anymore anywhere else. And so I just immediately started right. trying to read up on wine as much as I could, because it's in my nature to want to correctly and factually answer people. And so I immediately got into wine and reading about it and learning about it. Fortunate enough to be taken under the wing by Tracy for a while and allowed to taste with her and Bear Dalton and Jeb Stewart, who used to be over at Shade and Cultivari. And so I just one day after a tasting, after I told Tracy she didn't know what she was talking about, she just turned the reins of the wine buying over to me.
Yeah, I think it's so interesting because you're not one of these sommeliers with like a whole bunch of pins or a fancy advanced this, master that. I mean, you're sort of entirely self-taught. Is that correct?
I mean, when I began into wine, it was the only way to learn was by tasting a lot, and you could go to bookstores and libraries. I mean, the internet apps and access to information was pretty limited. So I was like subscribing to Decanter and Wine Spectator and reading every wine book I could. I mean, I did start out with the court, and I did get my certification, but it just didn't jibe with what I was doing. It didn't seem to necessarily make me a better restaurant somm. And I think back then the idea of like delaying so much of the things that I was doing that made us successful as restaurants and myself successful in order to earn a pin didn't feel worthwhile. And I'm not saying it's not, and that there aren't fantastic master sommeliers, but it wasn't that big a deal back then when I started out as a sommelier. And it wasn't like this puncher ticket to a quick rise of celebrity. So to me, it wasn't as beneficial as just doing my job. And you know, the way the exam has evolved, it requires a lot of time to just study pure minutiae. And which is not to say I don't know a lot of unnecessary facts about wine, but it just doesn't, I would have to stop doing my job as effectively now to pass the exam.
Well, and I just, I hate this word because it comes with all these expectations, but as a journalist who didn't go to journalism school, I think you can be sort of smart and diligent and focused and understand your subject without necessarily having a whole bunch of credentials.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of different routes to it. And the way I love and count amongst my friends many very talented master sommeliers, some of which who became masters after they worked around me or called on me as wine reps and other things. But, you know, it's not the only path to being very good at wine. I mean, maybe one of the most famous somms in the U.S., Raj Parr, didn't get his MS pin. Paul Greco, who was probably as influential as any somm in getting people onto, like, you know, these biodynamic and these obscure wines and these natural wines. So there's just a lot of different routes to take. I always viewed it like this. If you're going to get a trial lawyer, you don't look for the one who simply graduated from Yale. You look for the one who has a proven track record of winning cases.
That's right. Give me Racehorse Haynes or whatever the 2020 equivalent of Racehorse Haynes is, I guess.
Yes.
So you've been with the company as Hugo has explored all these different Mexican restaurants, and that's led to a corresponding interest for you in Mexican wine, spirits, and beers. So just tell me a little bit about that process and kind of how you immersed yourself in that world.
So, you know, when I was working at Backstreet, we began having conversations that we were going to design Hugo's. And so I was in on that from the ground floor. Obviously, at that time, I probably knew the least about Mexican food. But once I knew we were going to do it and Hugo's began starting showing me stuff, I just fully immersed myself in the agave culture and anything and everything I could find and tasting. And I also knew we were hoping to kind of change the idea of Mexican food in Houston. And that to me meant attacking it from the beverage part, because back then it was almost all Tex-Mex or taquerias, and it was all beer or margaritas. And a lot of it was frozen. And I'm like, well, that's not really what they do in Mexico. And I wanted to show that it could be a world-class cuisine, which meant we wanted to have complex cocktails and we wanted to have a wine list. And so, you know, from day one, we wrote this kind of wine list, not just because I love wine, but because I wanted to elevate the prestige of Mexican food and kind of reshape the way people think about it and what Hugo was doing. So, you know, that's how that began. And then, you know, it was very successful over a decade of doing that. And then we began having conversations about doing Caracoles. So, I mean, at that point, I was much further along in my overall knowledge of Mexico, had been there dozens of times and had traveled a lot. And so I got to, you know, take part in the design, build out the concept and everything we did for Caracoles, and which was a whole new ballgame with wine because it was coastal Mexican cuisine, which is a little bit more elegant and brighter and refined, which meant it was an even more of a wine opportunity. And I thought that restaurant, I still think that restaurant doesn't get maybe the credit it's due. The number of places around the country and in Houston in particular that copied elements of Caracoles and what we ushered in cuisine-wise, wood grilling, wood burning ovens for everything, a heavy, heavy reliance on regional seafood. You know, I've seen so many of our dishes pop up all over the place. So I'm really proud of what we created there. And I still think it's a stunningly beautiful restaurant. I can't wait to reopen it back up after the quarantine ends. And then we did Sochi a few years ago, which was really our chance to kind of deep dive into a place that Hugo and I first went to together like 18 years ago, which was Oaxaca. And, you know, that's kind of the inevitable thing. We'd went interior, we'd went exterior, and now is the time to go really deep into a region. And what better region than Oaxaca?
Yeah, I will say Caracoles is the restaurant. You know, our office is located near the Galleria. And so whenever we have colleagues visiting from out of town and it's like, well, you know, where can we go for lunch or where can we go for dinner at the end of a workday? It's like, let me show you something that you can't get in Austin or Dallas. And so inevitably we wind up at Caracoles, and it's always to raves. I mean, I So you may think that restaurant is underrated, but at least in my mind, it's properly rated.
I think Houstonians love it. I just meant that if we were a city other than Houston that had Caracol, like if that was Miami or San Francisco or Chicago or New York, that restaurant would be so well known nationally. We're just not quite the tourist destination that some of those other places are. Or heck, if we were in Austin, like the Austin South by Southwest writers and food writers would be trumpeting that restaurant to no end. But we've been very successful and we're very lucky about it. I just meant that it's to me, it's a pretty brilliant thing we created. And, you know, arrogance aside, I'm just very proud of that.
Well, and the other thing about opening all these additional restaurants is you've really built yourself. I mean, you've had some really talented sommeliers work with you over the years. I mean, you've been a mentor for a whole bunch of people.
Yeah, we've been so fortunate just in general to have talented people. I mean, all our general managers who work for us now began with us as waiters and have risen up the ladder to become who they are. Our director of operations started out as a food runner. We've had bar professionals that have gone on to management or gone on to run other programs around the city. We've had great sommeliers like Angie Chang and Andres Blanco and Lindsay Huntsman and several others that have worked for us that have done just a great job. And I count as excellent wine ambassadors, just period, and really lovely people.
All right. So let's talk about what you're doing right now during the coronavirus. I mean, you know, you have these four sort of high-end sit-down restaurants with elaborate beverage programs, and all of a sudden, you know, you can't do hardly any of that. So let me just kind of take you through some of the, from my perspective, some of the things you're doing, starting with moving to food like curbside to go. How's that been going? Kind of what's that been like for y'all?
I mean, it's been an adjustment. I think any full service restaurant has to change and reevaluate the way they're doing things because takeout is a totally different model, right? I mean, things need to be able to travel better. You need to focus on things that hold up well, but that still exemplify what you're doing. And, you know, so we had to redo our menus, and then you're asking, like, you know, chefs to produce things in an entirely different way. And it's also very intense because a lot of these orders now come in a very short window. You ask any restaurateur around Houston right now, and they'll tell you Fridays from like 6 to 8 are very, very intense. And so you definitely have to rethink the model for it. So I think we've done that pretty well and still focused on what we're capable of doing. Obviously, we haven't been able to keep all the restaurants open. Both Sochi and Caracol are in part of town specifically affected by, you know, the quarantine and the shutdown of businesses and the shutdown of conventions and hotels. And so we've focused our energy on Hugo's and Backstreet.
Right. And you've also, obviously, you've also been a big proponent of selling wine to go. You're putting packages together for people. You're selling wine at a pretty serious discount. What has the response been like to that? And how do you feel like that's going?
I mean, I think it's very good. I think, I would love to do even more, and I will hopefully continue to do more. I think me personally, it makes a lot of sense. We've always had a pretty diverse wine list, a very seasonally appropriate wine list. I taste anything and everything I can get my hands on the market. Most weeks I taste around 120 to 150 wines. So I'm really well versed at what's out there. And, you know, after 20 years as a somm, I am good with interacting with people. So I can have a text or an email or even a short phone conversation and really dial into what it is that people like to drink and want to drink. And I can tailor something to make them happy. And it doesn't have to be a $100 bottle of wine. Sometimes it's like, look, you should try this $15 bottle of wine. And the stress of this all aside, I still love that. I love when I get to help somebody find a cool wine. And, you know, that was something that was harder and harder for me to do before this came along, because, you know, with as many restaurants as we had, I was shifting into more of a bureaucratic position. So I wasn't getting to walk the floors as much as I once did. So this kind of scratches that itch really nicely. And I think I've been able to put together some amazing things for people.
Well, and telling people, try this $15 bottle of wine makes it that much easier to come back to them at some point down the road and say, okay, now you got to try that $100 bottle, or now it's time to splurge on that $200 bottle, I think.
Oh, I think absolutely. I mean, I never tried to cut too deep when I was a floor som, because I was looking at it like, look, I want to see you again. I want to earn your trust. And, you know, after 20 years, I have a number of customers that they know, I know their palate and where they're going. And so they'll just say, hey, pick me out something. And I get pretty good carte blanche on that. But even when I meet, you know, when I teach a wine class to consumers, my first piece of advice to them is that when you're going to buy wine, and I don't care if it's dealing with a sommelier like me on the floor, or a steward, or a bartender, or a wine shop employee, if they don't at least ask you two or three questions before making a recommendation, just ignore them, because they clearly don't care who you are and what you feel and what you like.
Yeah, they're just trying to earn some sales incentive or whatever.
Yeah.
All right. And tell me about these. You started doing videos on Facebook that you're calling My Messy Cellar. What inspired you to kind of feature a different wine every day?
You know, there was a brief period a couple of years ago, I had this great idea where I would write up a wine every day for a whole year. And I think I made it about 50, 60 wines deep, and I just got so busy. And as you know, cause you've met me, I'm a little bit of an anal personality type. And so if you're going to put something out there, if you're going to write, it's kind of like you as a journalist, if you're going to write something or report something, I like it to be exceedingly accurate. And so I was spending a lot of time double checking everything, crossing my T's, dotting my I's. And so the video thing allows me to be a little more off the cuff. And I know a lot of these wines really well. And it just was a way to, I don't know, just to burn off some of the pent up energy I had, and also kind of celebrate the wine producers I love, because it's not just restaurants and sommeliers that are hurting. It's winemakers, wine growers, wine distributors, wine importers, wine sales reps. And so anything you can do to remind people that these wines are out there and that they can get them and that there's still fantastic stuff out there is good, because, you know, you don't want to be forgotten. And if I can keep these wines and these people from being forgotten in any way, shape, or form, I'm really happy to do that.
You did a guest video a couple of days ago with Jack Mason from Pappas Brothers, who's also been a guest on this show. I should point that out, I suppose. Do you have other sommeliers that are like pinging you, like, when can I get in your messy cellar? When can I talk about a wine?
There are several. Yeah, they're lined up. And so I'm going to start spreading my work out and get a few of them in there on guest appearances. So we've been doing this thing where I've been trying to feed the sommelier community at least once a week, because we do a big wine event, as you know, I put on called Iron Sommelier. And so a lot of those sommeliers are out of work right now. And so once a week, we've been putting together family meals for them and their spouses and their kids. And it's been a chance for me to say, hey, can you pop in and do a cellar while we're doing the getting your order ready? And so they've been gracious and kind enough to do that, even though I would never require them to sing for their supper. They're just their fellow wine peeps, and they like Jack. I mean, they love talking about wine. And so it's nice to also give them an avenue to do something that they love.
Yeah. You guys have also been a big part of Houston Shift Meal, feeding hospitality workers at least a couple times a week. How's that going?
That was great. I mean, between Hugo's and Baxtery, we probably do it about five times a week. I just dropped off, some smoked fish chowder that they're going to give out today. It was made with red snapper. To me, it's a chance for us to put on our thinking cap. I mean, I applaud all the places that are feeding our workers around the city. But I also think, you know, we have an obligation to feed them well. It doesn't necessarily have to be expensively, but feed them well, which means we should be thinking beyond burgers and pizza in creative ways that we can still get them sustenance and flavor and joy. And so, you know, it's not something we do as a moneymaker. It's something we do just to support our community, and at the same time gives us a chance to be creative and show the hospitality that so many of them have showed us over the years.
Well, no, I look at those meals, you know, they filter across my Facebook feed or whatever. And I think, you know, I'm a little disappointed. I'm almost disappointed to have a job. It's like, I would pay for that deal. Like, you know, they look good.
Yeah. I was just talking to one of my chefs today, and I was thinking about doing like some of them for consumers coming at a reduced price, but where we we maybe add in a dollar or two that then goes right back to feeding more shift meals. Because, you know, if we get a really popular day, we're set to do a certain number, but we'll often go over it, and I'll either contribute it, or if I've been, you know, Venmo to tip money for something I've done for somebody, then it just goes right into the pot to kind of contribute back to the meals for people.
Yeah, charge me 10, 12 bucks for it, you know, kick the, you know, cover your costs, kick the rest of the next meal or whatever. Like, I, as a consumer, I'd be very into that.
Yeah, that's just something fun. And like I said, when you're every day, we kind of figure out a new way to kind of approach this and look at this. And I think both here at Hugo's and Backstreet, we've been lucky that we have a lot of talented people that work for us. And so once you get past the shock of this all and the stress of it all, then you kind of get back to using that, you know, really wonderfully trained brain that has been living in restaurants for most of its life, and you figure out ways to be creative and thoughtful and still execute.
Yeah. So the other thing you do that I really enjoy kind of observing is that you are not afraid to mix it up with people on Facebook. You are not afraid to tell people when they have like terrible taste in tequila or like stop ordering from horrible chain restaurants, or, I mean, you are feisty, my friend. You're not afraid to speak your mind.
I'm not mean, but I will say, like, you know, at some point you have to call a spade, right? And like, if you say you love Houston and you're on a message board that celebrates Houston institutions, and every time you're touting snooze, I think you should look at yourself. I think you should say, do you really want our city to be a place that is nothing but Starbucks and snooze and, you know, Austin taco chain this? And, you know, I'm in this industry. I've been in this industry for 22 years. I want to celebrate the places and the people that make it special. And so, you know, I will occasionally politely, but remind them that, like, you can go beyond the blasé and do more good by supporting the community. And I think it's the same thing with wine and spirits. And it would almost be hypocritical of me if I just told people, oh yeah, yeah, go ahead and drink Camus every time. Oh yeah, go ahead and drink Cuervo every time. I'm like, well, I have spent 20 years researching this and 20 years making connections to people on this. And like, I see you've bought some local vegetables in your basket, but maybe you could also try and use the same approach to wine or spirits or restaurants. Because it doesn't make sense to me that you would frequent a farmer's market and then frequent Starbucks.
Right. Yeah. You know, mix your, you know, your, and it's not even like you're advocating for one local coffee shop or another. It's like, go to Blacksmith, go to Southside, go to Catalina, go to Boomtown. Like, just doesn't really matter which one. Like, just mix it up a little bit.
Yeah, I think it makes, like, we tout all the time about how Houston is wonderful, and it is totally wonderful. The sheer diversity of our city is so amazing, and you don't really appreciate it until you travel. And that's true about our dining and our culinary and our bar and our, you know, wine scene. And so I want to keep that diversity alive.
Absolutely. So the other thing I want to ask you, you know, have you started to think about kind of what life will be like when things can get back to normal? I mean, do you have plans?
Like personal plans, or you mean like professional plans?
No, I mean like professional plans.
I mean, we're having talks about that every day. It's almost like you're plotting out an imaginary course because you're still waiting on more information. And so, you know, I think reality wise, everything's going to have to get tighter after this. I think menus will get smaller. I think wine lists will probably get tighter. I think what we can execute will have to be more streamlined, at least in the immediate aftermath. Because again, not everyone's going to suddenly go back out at once. And there are real ramifications to this. And so you're going to have to be 10 times more thoughtful in the aftermath, I think, of this, if you want to long-term be successful. And so it requires you to think a lot. So, I mean, that's what I spend a lot of my days doing. I think about what we're doing today and what we're going to do tomorrow and what we're going to do 2 months from now. So,
and then I'd feel like I'd be missing an opportunity if I didn't ask you about the restaurant you guys are opening in Uptown Park. I don't know if you have any details you'd care to share about that.
Can't really talk about it yet. Obviously, it's something we've been working on for a while. And, you know, we'd love to share the details of it, but you've known us over the years. We tend to keep things pretty tight to the vest. And so we didn't really share anything about Caracol until right before we opened. And you were there, I think you were there in Sochi, like maybe 2 weeks right before we opened. And that was your first introduction to what we were doing there. So, which I'm sure we will do again. We will have you in early so you get to see it. But that's just kind of one of our MOs. And so Tracy, you know, our fearless leader, and Hugo are very thoughtful about everything. And so we tend to want to be thoughtful. And, you know, I'll just say we think we're adding something new to Houston. We think we're adding something fun to Houston. We think we're adding something more approachable to Houston. So.
Well, I didn't really expect you to spill all the beans, but I just, you know, I feel like as long as I had you on the line, I had to try.
No, I appreciate it. After 20 years working for Tracy, though, she's coached me well.
Well, I mean, that brings me to sort of the end of the things I wanted to discuss with you, unless there is something that you would like to mention.
You know, we I didn't really talk about much of Hugo's. We obviously are doing wine takeout there, and we've done some really good things with cocktail kits. And in this coming week, I'm going to be introducing even more. We've so far focused on just producing a really good at-home easy margarita and a mezcal rendition as well. But we're also going to be doing, you know, we do great Bloody Marys. I have a few other things on the horizon that I'm working on. Going to do a unique Paloma for take home, and maybe a mezcal old fashioned, a couple other things. But you know, I feel for all the bars that are closed right now, because man, I do miss making cocktails for people so much. I love wine, but there's a creativity and an immediacy when you serve someone a cocktail. And so we've been trying to do that in ways that are allowed by the TABC for Hugo's and a little bit of Backstreet. And so that's definitely something I'm going to be working on in the very near future.
Yeah, I've been making sort of poor man's ranch waters, you know, take the Topo Chico, sip a little down, replace with tequila, and squeeze a little lime in it.
Which is a great drink. I mean, it hits the spot. Topo is always wonderful with tequila. If you can find it, El Tesoro tequila is amazing in a ranch water. That's probably my favorite tequila in Mexico. I'm dying to share with people my single barrels that I'm sitting on of it, but we can't do that until, you know, after the quarantine or unless TABC decides to change the laws a little bit more.
Yeah. You don't want to be one of those people that's selling, you know, pre-mixed frozen margaritas in gallon jugs.
Well, you know, that's one of those things, like I said, I understand people and places trying to survive right now. A lot of places, though, are just flagrantly breaking the law. But that's their business. We will not do that. We can't do that. But, yeah, I would just say this. If someone's offering you a $50 and under gallon of margarita, you should push yourself away and leave as quickly as possible, because there's nothing good in that.
Yeah, that's gotta mean that their cost on the tequila, on a gallon of tequila, is about $10 or $15. That's not a good sign. That's not good eats, as Alton Brown would say.
No, there's no good lime juice in there. There's no quality ingredients in there whatsoever. There's a lot of circumspect on that.
All right. Well, before I let you go, we have to do what we call the lightning round. Five easy questions, five short answers. Just say the first thing that comes to mind. Sean Beck, since you're a sommelier, what is your favorite varietal?
Riesling.
All right, very good. What is the first band you ever saw in concert?
Oh, Harry Chapin Carpenter. Well, he's not a band, but Harry Chapin Carpenter.
Yeah, performer, yeah. All right, what is your fast food guilty pleasure? It has to come from a restaurant with a drive-thru.
I will say this, it's got to be Whataburger, but only between like 11 p.m. and 3 a.m. in the morning, because those are the hours that you would leave an inventory or a long day, and it just hits the spot at the time of day.
All right, who is your favorite Houston sports figure, past or present?
Oh, Hakeem Olajuwon.
And then when you go to a pizzeria for the first time, what are your go-to toppings?
I think it's still just pepperoni and olives. I mean, I just like the classic.
All right. Tell people how to follow you on your various social media platforms.
So if you need some feistiness in your life and an opinionated sommelier, you can follow me on Instagram at Sean Pours. You can find me on Facebook under Sean Beck, and you can email me at sean@htownrestaurantgroup.com. I'm always happy to answer questions and help with wine recommendations, whether you're getting them from me or just looking them for them out in the open market.
All right. Sean, thanks so much.
Always a pleasure, Eric. Thank you for shouting out to the Houston food and wine scene. We appreciate all you do.
Thank you.
Anytime, sir.
You can follow me on Instagram at Eric Sandler. Keep it locked on culturemap.com for all the latest Houston bar and restaurant news. Thanks so much for listening. I'll be back next week.